From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 26th day of June 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson. We'll check the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And I'll update you on the agricultural news for the day, including some of those cover crop things you've been wondering about. Yes, you may plant corn. Yes, you may plant soybeans as a cover crop. Probably best to check with NRCS and, of course, the Farm Doc Daily website. There's a whole lot of information between those two places that you'll want to know about, and we'll learn a bit more about those this afternoon right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished in Chicago today. July corn down 4.25 cents at $4.43 and a quarter. December at 4.54 and a half, three lower, and the May contract at 4.61 down two. July corn of 2020 at $4.61 and three quarters a bushel, 2 cents lower. July beans down 9.25 cents, finished at $8.94 and a quarter. September at 9.06, 8.5 lower. November beans down 8.25 at $9.18 and a quarter. In January futures, 8.25 lower at $9.30. Next year's July at 9.47 and three quarters, down 7.25 cents. Bean oil futures 19 cents lower at 27.81. The bean meal at 3.13.40, down $2.30. Soft red winter wheat in the July contract, the harvest month up 8 cents at $5.43 and three quarters. The December at 5.56 and a quarter, 5 and three quarters higher. And hard red July at $4.69, up 3 and three quarters of a cent. December there at 5.03 and three quarters, 3 and three quarters of a cent higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago, June contract at 109, up $1.25. August at 105.37 and a half, $2.12 and a half cents higher. And feeder cattle in the August contract at 135.82 and a half, up $4.50 today. September futures up $4.47 and a half. They finished at 136.35. October, November, January, March all started with a $4 figure today for the feeder cattle. Lean hogs, July contracted $73.55, down 85 cents, and the August futures 70 cents lower at $75.47 and a half. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, you're welcome. I love it.
Well, let's talk about some things that are coming up this week. We'll get to the grain stocks and acreage numbers in a minute, but can we start, and I think you'll have something to say about this, with the G20 that's coming up at the end of the week. President Xi and President Trump are scheduled to meet, at least for a little while. What do you think about this?
Well, it's kind of interesting because there's been quite a few wire stories out, you know, that trade flows are really becoming more difficult because of the tariffs, not just, you know, with China, but all over the world. So, you know, you're looking at a group of 20 large economies preparing to meet in China or meet in Japan. And so there's pressure coming. I believe there's more pressure coming that's going to come from them to try and get this thing settled, because it's now starting to affect everybody. You know, China is still seeing companies leaving and going to Vietnam, and right now there are rumors that Apple may reduce its presence in China. And, I mean, that's big, because Apple has, they have some of their stuff assembled here, some of their stuff in Thailand, but they have quite a lot of things manufactured there as well as assembled there. So I think that that's interesting. And we're 4 days off from this thing. We're going to have our hog and pigs report on Thursday here in the U.S., and we're expecting to see a larger herd again, which we've had record herds, you know, the record increase just about every time we see this. But the big part about it is that China announced that they're likely to stop taking meat, especially pork, from Canada because of counterfeit veterinarian health documents. And so for us, you know, that they're probably going to take as much pork as they possibly can from us, but it does put them in a position of needing to replace that from somewhere else. And, you know, if it comes here, but it's extremely important. I think what's happening is we're starting to really see the pressure mounting on them too. Their inflation is up in China. The people are upset. So she's going to have to do something one of these days. You know, I still say the biggest thing is you know, when you negotiate, you got to figure out a way to get out of it with everybody saving face. And saving face in the Chinese situation is number one. So we'll see.
Indeed, we will. Grain stocks and acreage reports are due at the end of the week out at 11 o'clock from USDA on Friday morning. Have you been watching this one, and what do you think they'll be able to show given the lateness of the planting season?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty universally held that this is not going to be an extremely accurate report, although they've tried as hard as they possibly can. It was taken in the first 2 weeks of June, and so the intentions of planting were different then, and we don't know how much they've really achieved, although we know that they're pretty amazing. As far as the guesses go, the average guess for corn is 87 million acres, down from 92.8 in March. And on beans, 84.6, down from 84.59 versus 84.61 in March. So they really didn't change bean acres very much. Wheat acres about the same. And so we'll have to see once. But, you know, you got to ask yourself, I'm interested in thinking about, are we overestimating the loss on corn acres compared to March? You know, 1993, we hear a lot of people comparing this to 1993. Well, we know that in 93, Illinois was not as heavily involved. But the June acreage report only showed a 3% drop from the March acreage report. And if that were the case, we'd go to 90 million acres instead of down to the 87 that the average guess is. And the worst we've ever seen was in 1995, when we actually went down 4% on the June report, and that would put us at 89 million acres. You know, and some of that refers back to what we've been talking about here, Todd, in the past, where there are a certain amount of acres that are not on the March report, you know, just aren't there because they're questionable acres. So they're more likely to be here. So, you know, so people are expecting a much bigger percentage. It may not end up being that. And when we look at grain stocks, I think grain stocks is interesting. Corn grain stocks, 5.3 billion versus last year, 5.3 billion. You know, so that's the average guess. Soybeans, quite a different situation, 1.8 billion. And that is versus 1.2 billion last year. So, you know, we've just seen the roles reversed, basically. Between corn and beans this year, wheat, 1.09 billion versus 1.09 billion in 18. So not a whole lot of difference in wheat, not a whole lot of difference in corn compared to last year, but a big difference in beans.
You know, earlier in the week, USDA released the weekly crop progress reports. It does that every week. I listened to the state statisticians, and I also called around a couple of times. Nebraska is about 2 weeks behind, kind of like where they were last year, according to them, though the crop's in different condition. Iowa is roughly 2 weeks behind, according to the statisticians. Minnesota, about 2 weeks behind. Illinois didn't give the weeks behind, but they're 5 to 6 weeks, and I've seen an awful lot of that crop. And then going east through Indiana and Ohio, I don't think it's very much difference from that. What are we to make of this and how it impacts losses potentially?
Well, you know, one of the difficulties that we have is, you know, when you're planted as late as we are right now, anytime you're late planting, I think the expectation of most people who are not directly related to farming is that the crop basically moves at the same pace as it does when you've planted in April and May. And that isn't the case because, you know, no matter what happens, you're planting into warmer ground. So you've got an opportunity for a crop to move ahead faster than it normally would. Now, that's going to depend on, you know, growing degree days, you know, the temperatures that we get. But I've seen corn already, you know, it'll lob on a foot in no time at all. And so the big question comes down to, is it possible that we could go from this terrific loss that we're expecting, you know, to perhaps something that isn't quite as bad or nearly as bad? And then I'll put a caveat here. When's it going to freeze? You know, that is, to me, in my mind, that's the biggest thing. Will we stay warm like we have in other years when we've been behind? You know, in the years that we've been behind of late, we've had Septembers in some places in the northern tier of the Midwest that have averaged around 80 degrees. And we need it this year. There's no question about that. So it'll come down to whether or not we can push that frost date out well into October. And if we do that, we've got a chance of pulling out a halfway decent crop.
So where's the managed money laying its bet on this crop?
Managed money, well, this is kind of interesting, I think, when you really look at it. Unlike what a person might expect, we actually saw them increase from 15,000 contracts to 23,000 contracts long in soft red wheat. But on corn, they went down from 193,000 long to 120,000 this week. On beans, they're net short 62,000. They were net short 39,000 last week. So, last week we talked about spreading, and they were buying corn and they were selling beans. Now, this week we see that they've been selling corn and they've been selling beans, and they've gone from 15,000 long on soy meal to 5,000 short, and they're 44,000 short on soy oil. They were 40,000 last week. So managed money is definitely changing its stance, at least at the moment. I think that, that's the question we have to ask ourselves is, we talked about the weather rallies last week. In 93, like I said, we went up for 2 weeks, we fell back. Then we went up for 3 weeks. Well, that's left in the dust because, we went up for like 7 weeks, okay? But then we fell back, and then from October to December, we rallied for 9 weeks. And so you gotta ask yourself, what exactly are they thinking? None of us ever know. But when you come down to it, I did not expect to see them reduce their corn position this week.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it, too. Have a good one.
You too. That's Jackie Vake. She is with Stuart Peterson. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension. You can find our program and listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. And please do visit the Farm Doc daily website, where the Ag Economist from the University of Illinois post an article each and every business day of the year. The address there is farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You can see the headlines from those articles at willag.org, but the full articles are at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. In today's agricultural news, let's start with cover crops. This week, farmers in much of the eastern Corn Belt will be eligible to plant cover crops as the late plant period on Prevent Plant Acres ends on June 26th. That's today. Following last week's announcement about the potential to harvest cover crops on September 1st instead of November 1, many farmers, particularly in the upper Midwest, started to wonder if silage corn would be eligible. According to Richard Flournoy, the deputy administrator of product management at USDA RMA, that's the risk management agency, silage corn can be eligible for planting on Prevent Plant Acres. He says a cover crop for insurance purposes has a broad definition. If producers have questions about what could be considered a cover crop in their state, Flournoy suggests a visit to the local National Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS, office. Additionally, he says an ag expert can deem a crop eligible by determining the prospective crop meets all the cover crop definitions. Here at the University of Illinois, Emerson Nafziger and Dennis Bowman in Crop Sciences have both signed a letter with the intent of making sure that corn is eligible in the state of Illinois. You can find more on that letter and other information on the websites that belong to the university. I would suggest starting with the Farm Doc Daily article that Gary Schnitke and company posted on Wednesday, the 25th day of June, that's yesterday, to the Farm Doc Daily website. Let's stay with the United States Department of Agriculture, but turn to the plan to move NIFA and ERS to Kansas City. A preliminary survey of employees conducted by the agency's newly formed union and shared exclusively with Politico found that 2 out of 3 employees are certain they will leave ERS rather than relocate to Kansas City. As many as 80% might quit, according to the survey. USDA gave those workers tapped for relocation until July 15th to make a decision, just 1 month after Purdue announced the final site selection. The secretary has said the move will save money and improve customer service by bringing the agencies closer to farming regions. The House of Representatives on Tuesday of this week passed a five-bill fiscal 2020 appropriations package containing the agriculture FDA measure, which includes language prohibiting Purdue from relocating ERS or the National Institute for Food and Agriculture, NIFA, out of the Beltway. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but turn our attention to policy now. Congressional Democrats continue to insist the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement is being rushed. Republicans and the White House counter that it's the best deal yet and needs to be passed soon. Democrats say they're not giving up on the NAFTA replacing USMCA, but they're not rushing ratification either. Here's House Trade Subcommittee Chair Earl Blumenauer.
The renegotiated NAFTA presents a rare and valuable opportunity for the United States, one that is too important to rush.
That's almost the same language as full Ways and Means Chair Richard Neal used at a hearing last week. Trade-ranking Republican Vern Buchanan countered USMCA is a 21st century trade deal with benefits that should not be delayed.
Delay in the congressional consideration of this agreement means that we don't see these considerable new benefits,
including enforceable new labor standards in and outside the deal that Democrats demanded but argue still need tougher enforcement, which the White House and Speaker are now working on as part of a side agreement. Senate Finance Chair Chuck Grassley says he'll move a House-ratified USMCA through his panel quickly.
This was signed last year. This is nearly July, so that's not rushing it, and I can't be any more clear. And I'm satisfied, and I think Lighthizer is satisfied, that the Speaker is very sincere about wanting to move it.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi has put together a team to negotiate with Trade Ambassador Lighthizer on a way forward. In the meantime, the U.S. and China officially agreed to resume trade talks key to ending their punishing trade war as President Trump heads to Japan to meet with China's Xi Jinping at the annual G20 summit later this week. Speaking of which, President Trump has been talking a bit about that summit, and while he is cautious, he says he's open to an agreement that could be reached during the G20 meeting in Japan. And that, of course, is a look at today's agricultural news. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the forecast. Drew, I've been driving around the state. Farmers have a crop in the ground, but they're going to have to spray and maybe put nitrogen applications on. So this has still got to be able to support a tractor and some pretty heavy equipment along with it. What are conditions like? And I think I'm mostly concerned from Mississippi River to the east at this point.
Yeah, the majority of that region will continue to see scattered showers and thunderstorms as we move forward through the next 2 weeks. But the large volumes of rain that we've been seeing will be become fewer and fewer. I don't think we're going to see nearly the kind of rain that we've had in the past. Now, with that said, we'll see localized areas of heavy rainfall once in a while. It looks like in this first week to 10 days of the outlook, those occurrences will be most likely in the north, so northern Illinois to northern Ohio and up into Michigan, which unfortunately is not going to add any kind of positive news to the bottom line here. The lower parts of the Midwest, though, does look a little bit better. I think the rainfall in the south will be much lighter and more infrequent. We'll have warmer temperatures there as well, better drying conditions between each event. And so the bottom line is that we will make some progress so that the ground can firm up a little bit. It's going to take some time, and certainly those fields that have the standing water in them, that's going to take a lot longer. And of course, at this point, they're not going to be able to plant anyway. But the longer-term outlook, as we go from mid-July into August, it should be a continuation of progressing in the right direction. We should see less and less precipitation as time moves along. Not necessarily droughty weather, but it is going to be a lot more typical summertime weather as we get out down the road a little bit. The first part of July, we're still going to be seeing a little bit more rain than what a lot of folks would like to see in some spots, but it will be moving in the right direction with less and less as time moves along.
I do not know whether you'll have an answer to this and how local this question actually is. I suspect fairly local, but maybe you'll get an idea. There will be a lot of herbicide applications that have to happen, but must avoid an inversion and the evening hours. How likely are those to happen?
Oh, that is a tough question. I think the situation is going to continue to be unsettled across the region for a while, so I'm not sure that we're going to be able to get those ideal conditions to occur. But like you just said, I think it's going to be a matter of local weather rather than general weather. I think there will be opportunities for the right conditions to be present to get that accomplished. But I can't sit here today and tell you that everyone's going to be in the right position at the right time to be able to get that all done.
How's the Western Corn Belt west of the Mississippi doing?
You know, some areas are doing really well. We've seen some excessive rain last weekend, of course, in parts of Kansas and northern Missouri. So those folks are back underwater again in quite a few areas. But to the north of that, in parts of Nebraska and Iowa, conditions are getting a little bit better. Iowa was also hit by some of that rain last weekend. So I guess the bottom line is kind of a mixed scenario. The further north you go in the Western Corn Belt, the better conditions are. And as we go out over this next two-week period, I think we will see better conditions there than we will east of the Mississippi River, just because the temperatures are going to be a little bit warmer biased on a more consistent basis, and we'll have better drying conditions to accompany what few showers we do get in that area.
How much of an agricultural concern is the heat in Europe at this point?
It's quite a big concern because parts of Europe are also teetering on a little bit too much dryness. And this week's temperatures in the 90s to near 100 degrees in France and Germany is certainly going to accelerate the drying rate. We're going to see the ground firm up rather quickly. And remember, Europe is a place where it rains a lot, usually all the time, and so their root systems are always shorter on their crops. So suddenly drying it down like we're doing right now does become a potential problem for crops as they get close to reproduction and could have a negative impact. What's most important is getting rain to fall after this heat wave passes. The heat wave will end on the weekend or early next week, and then it's going to be imperative that we start seeing better rains. And at the moment, most of next week doesn't look that wet.
Close me out with a quick tour of the growing regions of China.
Yeah, the majority of the North China Plain continues to be hurting for moisture. It's a very crop-rich area, and it does need significant amounts of moisture in the unirrigated crop areas. But areas up in the northeast corner of the country, Heilongjiang and Jilin, Liaoning, where most of the soybeans are produced, or at least over half of them are, the conditions are just about ideal, with a good mix of rain and sunshine expected over the next 10 days.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right, have a good day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media and Illinois Extension. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget, you can find and listen to our programming anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. There we post most, if not all, of our ag programming in its entirety, not long after it airs on the radio station. In the case of Commodity Week, even before it airs. This week, that program will be live on the radio on Friday afternoon because of the USDA reports. They're due out at 11 a.m. Friday. That includes the grain stocks and the acreage figures. Again, that happens on Friday morning at 11 o'clock. We'll do the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week live during the 2 o'clock hour on Friday of this week. You have a great afternoon, and thanks so much for listening.